Welcome to Home But Not Alone with Tim and Sarah, where we talk about real life as a stay-at-home Catholic parent. If it's noon and you're still in your pajamas, have reheated your coffee 3 times and tried to pray but got distracted, this is the place for you. Life is crazy, but through it all, remember, you're never alone. You've got God's grace and our friendship coming your way. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Home But Not Alone. Today, we're going to talk about our words and healthy communication. We want to help you improve communication because some words that we think are so common and so powerful that we don't even realize anymore the power that they have, and a lot of times destructive power. So we want to share a few of the words and phrases that we've noticed that we just kind of want to stop saying because of the damage that they cause, and then some words and phrases that we need to say more. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. So, okay. I am last week I had a cold. I'm long over it right now. I've got a little cough drop in right now. So if anybody hears that, I apologize. But I need that because I get this residual cough. The reason I bring that up, nobody cares. But the reason I bring that up is because a couple years ago, I saw on one of the morning national news morning shows, whatever, they were talking about a study out of Canada that indicates that whole man flu thing where it's like men get sick and we're like, I'm dying and I can't. And then women get sick and they're like, oh, I'm sick. Okay, I'm going to keep going. And just, you know, that there's the study came out that said that there's a biology behind that, that the level of estrogen that women have enables you all to keep going and actually fights off and minimizes symptoms. Huh. And this is one study. I have no idea how valid it is, but I absolutely 100% buy that. What do you think?
So the man flu is real.
Yes. According to one study that I can't currently cite. So that sounds very reliable.
Well, good thing this isn't a science podcast. It's just a parenting podcast.
Exactly. Citations.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that I need to be more understanding when my husband is a little bit sick and he's more sick than I am?
I mean, I think we should all be a little more understanding. But
you're right.
That's my thought. I don't know. Maybe that's for real then. Maybe that explains why, you know, even men make fun of men. We make fun of ourselves for this all the time. And it's like, maybe that's a real thing. Maybe there is a real biological need. I don't know, difference. Anyway, I don't know. I have no idea. Anyway, that's just a random thing I've been meaning to run by you for a long time and see if you had any thoughts on it.
Well, it's appropriate, I guess, as we go back into cold and sniffle and sick season here.
Yes, exactly. So maybe if it's true, then any women out there, you know, be extra nice to your men who might actually think they're dying, you know. From the common cold. It's, you know, I tend to really think I'm dying. And my wife looks at me and says, you're not. You're going to be fine. I'm like, but you don't understand. It feels like I'm dying. Anyway.
Duly noted.
Let's talk about some of these words. So the first one that I want to bring up is the word should. Okay. Now, I have found that should creates an absolute. It becomes like this self-imposed restriction that denies the influence of others and even denies the impact of God on our life. Now, I think we have a tendency, we use the word should, and we use it for a ton of different ways. Like I've heard people say, I should be married by now, or I shouldn't have been broken up with by that person. You know, I should still be in that relationship. And then you also hear it a lot from people who are married, like, you know, I should be able to do as much as that other mom, or I should be able to give my kids as much as somebody else's dad. You know, my husband or wife should have taken care of this for me, or maybe should have been a little nicer when I had the man flu. I don't know. You know, but us telling the situation, this, like, we can't change the situation by telling it what it should be. And when we keep, when we create those absolutes, those limitations, like I said before, we're not leaving room for God's influence on our life. We're not leaving room for, you know, really anything else. And I know that this comes up a lot in people who are trying to avoid pregnancy or people who are trying to achieve pregnancy, and it hasn't happened at the time that they desired. And those desires are real. Those desires are real. But when we create an absolute by saying something should happen or should be happening or should have happened, whatever it is, when we create an absolute, we create this mental block and we are no longer open to other influences or other possibilities, whether they be good or whether they be an inherited suffering in one way, shape, or form. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on the word should?
So we should stop saying should.
Yeah. That was so hard to not write. Write that down.
Is it, I'm sorry. I had to say it.
Things we should not say. Should. That's
the things we want to stop saying or need to try to stop saying. Well, I actually agree with you. And this was something that when I was back in counseling that I had learned from my counselor. And what he said to me was that saying should is one of those. We talked about like consolations versus desolations. And he told me that saying should is one of those desolations, because when we're struggling with something and we say, well, I should have done this or it should be that way. He said that produces in you feelings of anxiety and doubt and hopelessness, and like you're oppressed by this thing that happened or didn't happen. And it doesn't help us move forward, but it traps us like in this idea, this false reality that we're creating with that should. And like things go wrong and things happen and things are bad sometimes. And that's like, okay, that's part of life. And it's okay to be sad about that and like recognize when things aren't the way we want them or we did something wrong. But one thing that my counselor taught me is that instead of saying, like, recognize that, first of all, recognize that in yourself, do you have this tendency to say things like, I should have done this? And then just notice yourself saying it. And then he told me to replace it with things like saying, oh, well, unfortunately, I wasn't very patient with the kids today. So instead of saying like, I should have been more patient with the kids, well, then I'm getting angry at myself. But saying, recognizing the wrong, you know, unfortunately, I wasn't very patient with the kids today. But tomorrow, I'm going to blah, 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 take this or that concrete step. So then instead of like getting stuck in that desolation, I'm replacing like my mental self-talk with this consolation. Like, unfortunately, I didn't, recognizing the truth, and then giving myself a concrete plan to move forward. And it kind of gets you out of that trap of just living in, you know, this guilt that you put on yourself.
Well, and yeah. And first of all, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think those are really good thoughts. And the thing with the word should is there are absolutes. So it's like, okay, as married persons, we should be open to life. Well, there's actual reasoning behind that. Or, you know, we should not inflict violence upon other people, you know, like not just as married persons, but like as anyone, we shouldn't inflict violence. I wanted to make sure that was clear. Grammar sometimes. Anyway, but like, you know, it's wrong to judge someone based on their appearance. We should not judge someone. Like, there are these moral absolutes, but and I think that the existence of those moral absolutes, it makes it easier to then elevate these non-absolutes to that level. So because we understand that, oh, no, there are things we should do. There are things we should not do. So then we take a perspective or a desire, and desires are often intrinsically good, or, you know, they lead us to things that are good. We're attracted to things that are good, whatever they may be, that because those things are good and because the absolutes exist, then we elevate those good desires to something that is an absolute. So I think that's
And then when we fall, you know, or we don't live up to that, then we feel that guilt. But I think it's just important that we don't get ourselves stuck in that guilt by using these terms that make it feel like we can't move forward. So, and I think that's where you draw the line of when you can use the should and when you shouldn't use the should.
There you go. By the way, we've talked about this before, but if anyone is ever, you know, hesitant or feeling awkward about seeking counseling for a variety of reasons, just one, remember, we can all use help in a variety of ways. There's no shame. Your mental health is a good thing. But on top of that, maybe one day you'll have a podcast and it'll give you material for it. So there you go. There's all kinds of benefits to that. There's another one that I want to share, and okay. it's a phrase, and the phrase is quality of life. Now,
okay. I've heard that phrase before.
Yeah. A lot of times, especially in medicine, we refer to that. That becomes a part of a variety of moral discussions. It's, you know, social and political issues and such get roped into these, unfortunately, as well. But not too long ago, gosh, this must have been maybe a year ago, a priest I know was at a young adult group that I was attending, and I don't even remember the context. I just remember he said that his least favorite term in medicine is quality of life, because every life has quality. It has, you know, an intrinsic quality that we can't take away. And the problem becomes more clear. The problem with that term becomes more clear when we realize that the term quality, we're using the term quality of life, but what we really often mean is quantifiability of life, which I don't even know if that's a real word, but that's a word I'm using. But the ability to say, you know, what can someone do? Can they do the amount as someone else? You know, if a person is limited by their physical abilities, then quantifiably, they might not be able to do as much as someone else. Mm. You know, someone with asthma is not going to necessarily be able to, you know, climb Mount Everest, you know, or someone who is, you know, in my shape is not going to be able to climb Everest. See, so they're...
But it doesn't change your quality of life. So these quantifiable things you're saying don't change the quality of your life, because exactly. Your life has dignity. It has this quality that's given to it by God, just because you're alive and you're created by God. So yeah. So we're trying to – so I think – are you saying like we're trying to measure something that is – that we don't really mean that that's what we're measuring.
Yeah, and we intend, I think, to measure, oh, you know, is someone able to enjoy their life? Are they able to – get things out of this and all that. But I think that takes it out of a Catholic perspective entirely. Right. The idea, you know, I've joked since before I had kids, before my wife and I had kids, that my kids can be smart but not talented, because we don't have the money for talented. And, you know, well, because, you know, and I've had people say, don't, what if they go pro? I'm like, do you know how much money it costs to get someone to go pro? Yeah. That's, you know. But the reality is that if my kids are not good at sports, and, you know, based on their parentage, they're not going to be. But if they're not, that doesn't mean that they are less. That doesn't mean that they can enjoy life less. If they struggle academically, again, based on their father, that's definitely possible. That's not going to say take away from what they can contribute to this world or what they can get out of it. It's right. Definitely not going to take anything away from their dignity or the value of their life or their, you know, the quality, the genuine quality of their life. Because I've known people and I've heard about many people who our society would say, oh, their life is very unfortunate. Oh, they don't have the means to do this. Oh, they don't have the ability to do this. And they have a fantastic life. I just heard a story earlier today that Dr. Scott Hahn was on Mother Angelica's show, and she leaned over to him during a commercial and said, you have a lot in common with St. Paul. You both write a bunch of things that I don't understand at all. And I thought, okay, well, then Mother Angelica and I have something in common as well. But just because she didn't maybe struggle to understand the writings of St. Paul or struggled to understand the writings of Dr. Scott Hahn, which I'm with her on that. Yeah. I love his writings, but whew, it's just way over my head. That does not mean that her life was less because of that. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, life has inherent qualities that can never be quantified, is something I have written in my notes. So anyway, that's that.
You also have this quote in here from our last episode.
Yeah, If you haven't
the value
watched,
of life does not depend on the place we occupy. It depends on the way we occupy that place. Go watch Saints and Superheroes to find out who said that.
There you go. There you go. If you haven't watched or listened to that episode, yeah. Saints and Superheroes, that was fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. Okay, I have another thing that we need to stop saying that can be really destructive and can be really easy to fall into as parents. When we say things like, ah, the kids are driving me crazy, or I can't stand what the kids are doing right now. And this was one that I'm not very proud to say I had to bring to my counselor and help me work through it. Because sometimes we do it like when we're very frustrated, we get caught in saying these things in our heads like, I can't stand this, it's driving me crazy. And so the problem with this that my counselor brought up to me was that, can you actually not stand this for 5 minutes? And the answer is no. If you sit here and listen to these kids, you know, like banging their pots and pans or doing whatever they're doing or screaming and running around the house for 5 more minutes, you will still be alive. The thing that you actually can't stand is if you weren't able to breathe for the next 5 minutes. You couldn't stand that. You wouldn't be surviving that. So it kind of reframed it. Like, it's not that I can't stand it. It's just that I'm frustrated with this. Like, I'm annoyed with this. And so he said, like, instead of just kind of blasting again these thoughts that are very, I think they kind of lock you into the stress that you're feeling, like, actually express what you're feeling. Okay, so I'm frustrated with blah, blah, blah right now, or I'm feeling very overwhelmed with trying to manage the kids and the house right now, or it's really difficult to complete everything I need to do today on my to-do list on my own without help. You know, so talk about like the actual feelings instead of making these fatalistic statements that just kind of like, they go overboard. There are these exaggerations that maybe make you feel better when you yell them. They don't really help solve the problem. And one of the things I want to caution against is some people say like, oh, instead of complaining about your kids or instead of saying negative things about your kids, when you do that, stop and say something positive about your kids instead. And I don't know about you, but that has never helped me. Like when I'm super irritated with my kids being like, wow, but they're really good at their math. Like, that doesn't help me. And that just doesn't work because we're legitimately feeling frustrated or upset by something in the moment. And one of the things that I've heard is that positive thinking, like, ignores the actual feelings that you're feeling and tries to discredit them and maybe even demonize them. Like, you shouldn't be feeling that way. Instead, say positive things about your kids.
Shouldn't.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. So instead of just kind of blasting those, I can't stand this, focusing on your feelings. And then again, what do I need to do right now to deal with these emotions? Like, maybe I need to take a break. Maybe I need to go eat a bar of chocolate. Maybe I need to ask someone for help. Maybe I need to adjust my priorities. With me, a lot of times it's that I'm so caught up in something else that I think the kids are, quote, interrupting, but I just need to reprioritize and pay attention to my kids a little bit. Maybe they're just looking for my attention. And then just bring those needs to someone around you instead of just blasting everyone with it. I can't stand you all. Or if I'm the only one.
Tell me the truth. Do you have chocolate in your house?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. Where do you hide it? No, I'm kidding. Don't say anything. Your kids might be listening.
I'll tell you where I hide my chocolate. I put it up in the cabinet behind the rice.
See, we just have chocolate chips and we're like, oh, those aren't for now. Those are for baking.
And then
they're not for baking.
Well, I buy dark chocolate because my kids don't like it.
Oh, that's smart. That's smart. Always figure out. There, comedian Jim Gaffigan once said, sometimes you got to lie to your kids like, ooh, you wouldn't like this ice cream. It's spicy, you know, that sort of thing. And I thought, you got to find out what they don't like. So you can. I like that. What's interesting is we did an episode all the way back almost a year ago on Daniel Tiger songs and that adults should have to listen to or should adults should listen to as well. And Mr. Rogers really emphasized that whole we need to teach kids to acknowledge their feelings. Well, we need to teach ourselves sometimes to do that as well. And even just the other day, I went to pick up my phone and I heard Mama Tiger in my head saying, enjoy the wow that's happening now. As in, don't get distracted by something else. Be present to the moment. I thought, I'm sorry, Mama Tiger, who doesn't really exist. I'm present. Anyway. That's those great. Are just all kinds of random thoughts. Here's another one that I have. So we need to try our best to stop saying I can't. Like, yes, like I acknowledged before, there are maybe physical limitations. I can't climb Everest. It's just not going to happen. And I know some people would say, you know, oh, you know, people older than you have done it. Yeah, well, people older than me have done a lot of things. That doesn't mean that I'm capable of doing it. Okay. I've used the example before in talks that I can't hit a baseball out of a ballpark. Could I spend forever training and maybe in a few years after I really put my body through all kinds of nonsense, could I physically do it? No, I still couldn't. But, you know, that's okay. That doesn't make me any less. So it's okay to acknowledge that we do have limitations, but it's also important to avoid the words I can't as being, like we've talked about, something that puts us in an unnecessary box and creates these limitations. So, okay. Quick story, I went on a service retreat in 2009. We went to West Virginia and we stayed at this, it's a farm, so they grow some of their own food and they used to have animals and then they stopped for whatever reason anyway. And it's one of these where they really teach you how to live simply. So you're there for 6 days, you're allowed 2 showers, and you're working, nice. You're doing farm work. So everybody smells.
Pretty smelly.
Oh, it's rough, but it's awesome at the same time. And when you get there, you're not necessarily with the people you showed up with. Everybody gets mixed up into groups, so you get to meet new people. And I met some wonderful people, including a woman named Jill. And Jill was in my group. And so every day we went to a different site. We did farm work and then we went off site to do work. And like, you know, we put on a roof at one place and we got to a location where we had to put in wooden fence posts because the place was building this woman a wooden fence because she had 2 grandkids who lived with her, but she had basically a small river on one side and a highway on the other. And she needed to keep her grandkids safe. So we were doing that for her. And it got to be like 100 degrees that day. And everyone else is in the shade of one tree, just like, we're all dying here. This is impossible. I think we all had man flu or something. Anyway, I've done enough of that joke. Okay. But but Jill was not. Now, here's the thing. A few years earlier, Jill was in a bad car accident. She was paralyzed from the waist down. Prior to the accident, she did not live a life of a faith-filled person. And she then had the accident and she felt like, you know, something happened and it changed her. And she was so devoted to the Lord from there on out. Jill is sitting in her wheelchair in 100-degree heat, leaning down, trying to dig several feet down into the ground. And she's like, come on out here, guys.
You're all sitting in the shade.
We're all sitting in the shade. And then she's like, never mind. You know what? You guys need a break. And she was serious. She was serious that we needed a break and she didn't. Oh, and most of us were college students. And she was, you know, in her 40s or 50s and paralyzed. And you know, the instinct would be to think, oh, she can't do something. Well, she told me and a few others that after her accident, she stopped using the words I can't because God can. And that was just one of those things that has always stuck out to me of like, we are so quick to say, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I'm incapable of doing this, or somebody else did this better. So why am I even going to do it? And yet Jill had this very clear understanding. I won't say I can't because God can. And I thought, wow. Okay. So it's important to understand, yes, we do have certain limitations, right. But just like, you know, Mother Teresa, Mother Angelica, and others, I don't think Jill would accept any of our excuses. So anyway, these are just a few things that I think we need to stop saying. Couple things.
So how about some things? Those are good. Like those. How about anything we need to start saying? I mean, I know we did some things to replace these with, but other things that we don't say that we need to.
So earlier I mentioned Dr. Scott Hahn, and I heard him mention something in a talk that I struggle with so much, but I am trying. I am trying. By the way, I love the phrase, I struggle, because struggle means you're still trying.
Right.
If you're, I think about it like this. If you're in a river and you're no longer struggling against the current, you know, if you're trying to swim upriver.
Right. And then it's a struggle, like, yeah.
And it's a struggle. But if you stop, well, you're not getting anywhere. You're going to be blown back. Anyway, it's a whole, struggling means you're trying. That's what I'm trying to get at. But Dr. Han said that in marriage, especially, we need to use the phrase, I'd be happy to. When our spouse asks us to do something, instead of saying,
okay,
exactly, you know, I don't want to, but I'll do it anyway, or why can't you do it, or any of these other things, I'd be happy to. And Dr. Han very quickly acknowledged after that that it's not easy for him. But the reality is that if we say, I'd be happy to, obviously we don't constantly want to do these things we're being asked to, but it helps us understand and remember that whole sanctifying aspect of marriage.
Yeah.
I desire to love and serve my wife, except when I don't want to. So that's the thing, is I need to purge that latter half of that sentence. And one way to do that is to get in the habit of saying, I'd be happy to. It's a great reminder to myself that that is what I desire, is to serve and love my wife, and that it is sanctifying for me. Another one is just, I'm thankful for. My wife and I, every night, we, no matter how difficult the day is, we always come up with 10 things. We alternate back and forth, 5 each, things we are thankful for from that day. And even on the most difficult of days, we do it, especially on the most difficult of days, because it helps us reframe the day. And there are a lot of difficult days in life. And so when we have one of those difficult days, or when we have a not so difficult day, or a wonderful day, we're able to put it in a perspective of, there are things we have to be thankful for. So I think it's important to say, I'm thankful for X, and to voice that to
and
other
people.
And as
like in our family, as spouses and as parents, to thank each other. I know something that I read recently was saying, like, not only catching your kids doing bad and correcting them, but catching your kids doing good and thanking them for it is very powerful. And, you know, same thing like you were saying with your spouse. I know my husband always, whenever I pull out something for him to grill when he gets home from work, like I defrost something for him to grill, because I don't feel like cooking dinner. And then he comes home and he's like, oh, thank you for pulling out something for me to grill. I'm like, you're welcome. Anytime. but it is, it's really nice, like, to be thanked for the efforts that you make for each other. So.
Yeah. And the last thing is just, I'm sorry, is the reality is that a lot of times we make mistakes. And even if we realize, oh, we're wrong, or we acknowledge that the other person was right, well, and again, whether this be to your spouse or whether this be to your children, and especially to your children in a way of, you know, showing them, demonstrating to them how to say you're sorry and the importance of it, and that it's not just them reporting to us, but that we owe them, you know, the love and service that we have promised. You know, they owe us the fourth commandment, but we owe them, you know, a lot, and we owe them in a way of love and service, and of demonstrating that, you know, what we do something, we do things wrong too, and to acknowledge their dignity and their rightness and their whatever it is. But then
absolutely.
Also,
I was just reading the other night in the catechism, the section on the fourth commandment, and it talks about like the duties of kids to the parents. And then it goes, and here are the duties of the parents to the kids. And I'm like, oh, and one of the things that it did talk about was, you know, acknowledging our faults to our kids and giving them that example of apologizing and seeking forgiveness. And it was just like a really good reminder, you know, that it goes both ways, the messing up and the saying I'm sorry and the forgiving. So definitely some important things there. Thank you for those.
Oh, yes. Well, we just want to thank everybody for watching and listening. Please, if you can, subscribe on the audio podcast, subscribe on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, give us the little thumbs up, like, it helps with the algorithm so more people can see that we exist. Sarah, where can people find you?
ToJesusSincerely.com and on Facebook and Instagram at ToJesusSincerely.
And you can find me at ChastedLove.org or on Facebook and Instagram at TheChastedLove. Oh, this is a bad one. Y'all can either enjoy this or really not enjoy it. So in the middle of the night, when kids wake you up, ask your spouse to guess their favorite continent. And when they look at you and say they have no idea what you're talking about, look them right in the eye and say, Europe. And then make them go get the kids. You're up, you're up, you're up. And remember, you're never alone.